Cope Industries, based in Wichita, Kansas, is the second largest private company in the nation. And the Koch brothers, that's David and Charles Koch, have been making headlines like crazy over the past few years. Their high-dollar political contributions have come under particular scrutiny. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we'll talk with the directors of a new documentary, Citizen Koch. We'll delve into the making of political documentaries and whether there really are two sides to every story. But first, a conversation with an investigative reporter about what changing open records laws might mean for the people of Kansas. That's coming up right after this news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman and we've got a busy day ahead of us. Later in the hour, we'll be talking with the directors of the documentary Citizen Koch. For now, I'm pleased to introduce Kansas City journalist Karen Dillon. She joins us for a discussion of a new open records law in Kansas. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Gina.
So, Karen, the Columbia Journalism Review has attributed a new law in part to your tireless investigative work.
That was very nice of them. I did a lot of work on it. I worked on it, you know, when I was at the Kansas City Star, and I worked on it when I was at KSHB. But, you know, I got to give a lot of credit to Melissa Yeager and Rex Harris and the investigative team over at KSHB, because without them, we wouldn't have gotten that second part of the story going. The bill was failing at that time.
Well, let's jump in and first of all, tell people what the bill is.
Okay. Yes. In Kansas, unlike any other state in the country, the police records are closed. What that means for regular citizens is if you want to know, why you've been arrested or why your neighbor was arrested, generally in any other state in the country, you can walk into the police station and get a copy of the police report, the portion that explains what the evidence is that the police have to charge you with a crime. In addition, police come to your house, knock on your door, come in and search your house, in every other state in the country, you get what's called an affidavit, a search warrant affidavit, and that explains the evidence that the police have to search your home or your property and seize property of yours. In Kansas, that law, you know, those laws have been closed for 35 years. And
Why did Kansas make this decision?
In 1978, there was a reporter who was with a Topeka newspaper, and she had heard on the police radio. She was monitoring a police radio in the newsroom, and she heard on the police radio that the police were searching for two men in a stolen car connected with a murder. She took the information down from the police radio, and then she was trying to get confirmation, and she'd gotten their names and all kinds of information. And the district attorney had gotten wind that she was doing the story. I think she called him for confirmation and told her that she couldn't publish it. They didn't want to release that information yet. There was actually an arrest warrant affidavit out for them, an arrest warrant out outstanding. She said she was going to publish the information, and she got confirmation by going to the courthouse and getting a copy of this record, which was a public record. The newspaper did publish that. The prosecutor was very, very angry, and he then charged the newspaper with a misdemeanor crime. At that time, if you published something that wasn't a public record, you could be, well, it's still that way today, but you could be charged with a crime. And so the newspaper was charged with a crime. The case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court overturned it, said, you know, the information was out there in the public. There was a police warrant, and she used that, and so it was a public record. So the attorney general at the time got interested in the case. You know, everybody, you know, there's legislators were very angry about it, and they then passed the law to close those records. And they've been closed ever since.
And so was the idea that somehow people having access to this kind of information, putting it out there in the public, was the prosecutor upset because it had he had perceived?
He felt that it damaged their investigation. And in fact, one of the suspects was never found.
We
don't know why he was never found, but he's still out there.
Well, and what is the law that passed in Kansas on Tuesday, July 1st? What is it and what does it change?
Okay. What happened with the legislature back in 1979, they closed all police records. And the way it worked until July 1st, if you wanted anything, if you wanted an investigation, you want anything, you'd have to go to a judge and pay money, file a lawsuit and ask for a simple police report affidavit or search warrant affidavit. Or, if there was a murder investigation and the case, somebody pleads guilty in other states, those records become open. What happened on July 1st was that the police warrant affidavits became open and the search warrant affidavits become open. The prosecutor can hold on to those for several days. But the intent of the law is that the media or the public may get those records fairly quickly, within 24 hours. I think that's the intent.
What kind of information is contained in a police report?
It's going to tell you, what you have when you have a police report. You'll have like a face sheet and it'll say your name and your date of birth and where you live. And that's what we were getting, that's what the media got and the public got before this. Before July 1st, but so it has all that information and it'll state what the crime is that you've been arrested for, or if it's a search warrant, it'll have similar information and state why they're going into your house. They suspect maybe there's drugs in your house or something. And the police report has an affidavit with it, and that is the part that was very important to get because it says, well, John Jones has been accused of robbing a bank, and this is what we know. He went into the bank, and people identified him, and it's all this information that even John Doe can't get until he goes through discovery. And all that information was disclosed. You can take like the case of the little girl who was kidnapped in Missouri several months ago. Down by Springfield, and in Missouri, these records have been open, and people had information about the suspect, who they were searching for, and that kind of thing, almost immediately.
And in
Kansas, you couldn't get that.
What did that allow people to do? I mean, we've heard a little bit of the argument from the Kansas prosecutor who had seen a reason to close records. Mm-hmm. What is the argument for having them open? What does it allow?
Well, there's a couple things. One is that people can see what the police are doing and make sure that they're safe from any type of police corruption, because when police are operating in the dark, like any entity where there's no oversight, problems happen, and we've seen that happen. We've seen it in Topeka several times with the Shawnee County Sheriff's Department.
Tell that story.
The Shawnee County Sheriff's Department, there were some deputies there who were actually going in and fabricating probable cause affidavits. These are the documents we're talking about that we couldn't get. They were saying that they bought drugs from people when they maybe hadn't and that kind of thing. And it was rampant within the department at that time. This has been more than a decade ago. And, finally the prosecutor in Shawnee County, I believe, got wind of it. And then there was an investigation. I believe that one of the police officers or deputies was actually prosecuted. I can't remember exactly all the details, but he is now, I don't think he went to jail. If he did, it was for a short time. But, there was no controlling that. And one of the jobs of the media is to go and look at these records and figure out, are people doing the right thing here?
To be kind of a watchdog.
We're a watchdog and we try to take care of all that, any kind of crimes and things like that.
Well, what was the effect of closed records on investigative journalism? Can you tell a specific story about a piece you were working on, a situation you were investigating where this really had a big effect on you?
what's happening July, what happened July 1st is a wonderful thing. It's changed how we are, how the media can operate. We can go in now and look at all these police reports and search warrant affidavits, make sure that the probable cause is, has evidence for, for example, I want to step back just a second.
Yeah, but please.
The Hart family is a perfect example where they live in Leawood. They have a nice home. They're an upstanding family. And one morning they get up and the police are pounding on their door.
When was this?
It was has it been 2 years?
Yeah, it's very, very recently,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, but fairly, yeah, recently. And they were put. I think the husband was put down. Robert Hart was put down on the floor, and you know they brought in the kids. They had two young kids, and the police said they were, you know, the face sheet of the search warrant affidavit said they were looking for drugs, marijuana possibly, and it turned out they found nothing. And so then the Harts wanted to know, why did you come in our house? We don't know what's going on. You know, tell us what's going on. No one would tell them. They couldn't get the documents. They finally sued, spent $25,000. A year later, they finally got the search warrant affidavit. And the evidence in that search warrant affidavit was flimsy. You know, it turned out that they had the family had gone to a hydroponic store to buy some little jars to – they were growing a garden inside, an indoor garden. And Highway patrolman from Missouri was watching the store and taking down driver or license plates, and then you know, reporting where, you know, looking up who those people who owned the cars, and then would report, you know, to that their city, you know, for instance, like the Harts, they took down the driver's license, and then they called Johnson County Sheriff's Department, said, hey, we had some people over here buying some hydroponic equipment. You know, so that they became suspects. And then the sheriff's department then went by, pulled their trash, found tea leaves at the time, tested them, thought they were marijuana. It was a false positive test. And so then based on that evidence, they went in their house and tore it apart.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with journalist Karen Dillon about the work she has done to change Kansas's formerly closed record laws. Now we have an open record law. And tell us more about maybe a story you have worked on that where not having access to open records really thwarted you.
Okay. So there was a case. So we now have the police reports and the search warrant affidavits are open, but investigative files remain closed. And it's not that we're asking, the public is asking, or the media is asking for those records right away. You know, once an investigation is done, they should be open to the public, one would think, and they are in most of the other states in the country. In this particular case, there was two women, Joy Biggs, 54, and her sister Brenda Sewell, 58, last January. Had gone to Colorado on a trip and were coming back, came across the Kansas state line into Missouri, came back from Colorado, and they got pulled over. Joy was driving her sister's Cadillac. She was going 9 miles over the speed limit, and the highway patrol trooper said that he smelled marijuana around the passenger seat where Brenda Sewell was sitting. Brenda was a woman she was very sick, and she had fibromyalgia and arthritis and several just terrible, you know, diseases and illnesses, and used marijuana, medicinal marijuana. So when the trooper said he could smell marijuana, she admitted that she had marijuana. She turned it over to him. It was a little over an ounce. So he took them to jail.
And
both
did she
women.
Also have like a prescription?
Yeah, she had prescription. Like prescription drugs were in the car, but they weren't in prescription bottles. They were in those traveling, pill cases, pill boxes. And they took them to jail, and they got into the jail and were booked in, and that became a terrible nightmare for both of them.
Would open records have changed that? Made that
different? Well, the next morning, I mean, Brenda got very sick. She started vomiting, and she vomited for like 24 hours. At one point, they took her to the hospital for 30 minutes. She was gone and brought her back. They just gave her some medicine to try to quell her uneasy stomach. And eventually she died in the jail. Well, she was declared dead later, but she was essentially dead when she left that jail cell the next day. And her sister and two inmates had to care for her. Joy Biggs wants to know what happened. You know, why was her sister allowed to be so sick, and why wasn't she helped? And there are obviously several mistakes that were made along the way, you know, as far as tending to her. There was an investigation that was conducted. It was conducted by the Goodland. This was in Sherman County, and it was at Sherman County Bastille is what it's called, the jail there, and it's in Goodland. And the police did the investigation for the sheriff's department. What their conclusions are, we do not know. The prosecutor, Sherman County prosecutor, is refusing to release the investigation, and he can under Kansas law. He does not have to release those records.
Even now he doesn't have
no.
to?
No. And in fact, the last time I called him last week because I'm working on a story that's going to be published in The Pitch tomorrow morning. It'll probably go up online tonight. But when I called him last week, you know, he hasn't returned my phone calls, and he doesn't have to. You know, he doesn't have to. He's not answerable to the public.
So what is the limitation on the new law that passed July 1st that makes this particular kind of record still closed?
What has to happen, okay, first of all, we know, you know, they opened the arrest records and they opened the search warrant affidavits. But the law needs to change so that once an investigation, at least when the investigation's finished, at some point it becomes an open record. It should not ever stay closed in perpetuity unless there's some reason to have expunged the record of, you know, for some reason. But investigations, you know, for instance, if somebody is charged with a crime and they plead guilty, we may never know exactly what went on. You know, those investigative files that the police have that they turned over to the prosecutor just don't become public in Kansas. They're still closed.
How did you first become involved in this subject? You've been reporting in many different ways on this issue of transparency in criminal records in Kansas. How did that get started?
I started reporting back in 1990 in Sarasota Herald at the Sarasota Herald Tribune. I graduated from the University of Missouri, and then I went to Sarasota. I was hired there as a night cops reporter. And as Melissa Yeager at 41 will tell you, and I will tell you, you know, Florida is a great place for public records and for the media because everything is open, just as it should be, I think, for a democracy and, you know, for, an open government. And so, you know, one of the things we did was check go to the police department. All records were open. And I guess a perfect example of an open record is I went to check the records one morning at the jail and noticed that Paul Rubens had been arrested, who is a.k.a. Pee Wee Herman. And I was like, oh, my God, you know. And so
I had noticed that in the write-up that the Columbia Journalism Review did about you. I was wondering how, you know, how that came to be you who broke that story.
Yeah, it was just, you know, I just happened to go to the jail and you look at all the police reports and of everybody, they'd give you a list of everybody who'd been arrested, and you go through their names and addresses. And then if you see one that looks interesting, you know, you pick that one and say, you know, could I get the affidavit, please, or the probable cause affidavit? And Paul Rubens was on there from Studio City, California, so he sort of stuck out.
Well, so that is sort of a milestone in your career in Florida. But when you came,
I came here, and my first assignment was in Wyandotte County. And initially, the records, it was interesting in Kansas. Although this law was passed in 1978, several counties still remained open. So their records were still open. And when I got to Kansas City, Kansas, the Kansas City Stars Bureau and KCK, the records were still open, but were closed soon after that. Even when the law passed July 1st, there were two counties who said, we're not going to close our records because it's wrong, you know, and they defied the law. But so that, you know, once they started closing those records, I thought it was outrageous. And I said, we've got to do something about this. And I would argue with the, you know, police over it. And I can remember having a conversation with a KBI agent and said, you know, I don't know how you can keep this from me. And he said, because we can, and you might as well forget it, you know, you're not ever going to get it.
You mentioned that you had worked in Florida where they had records that were as open as a state could be.
Right.
Were there any problems that resulted from it?
No, never. And Florida is really interesting because with the Pee Wee Herman case, when the police finished their investigation, they send the case over to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor then at that point, the records become open to everybody. So we then, of course, got the records when the case went to the prosecutor and found that Pee Wee Herman had solicited the department, you know, when he was in the parking lot being arrested at an adult theater. He solicited the department deputies to let him off, and he'd put on a show, you know, and, you know, a promotion for the for kids, you know, in the name of the Sarasota County Sheriff's Department. And nobody knew that, but, you know, we found that out at the time, you know, when that happened.
So you don't think there's any such thing as records being too open, that's not a possibility in your mind?
No, I don't think that's true. I think sometimes to get an investigation done, I think, you know, there has to be some level of, you know, we got to get this job done, or, you know, we can't have the interference of the public every step of the way. And so, yeah, I think, you know, that, you know, as long as it's not interfering with the case. And in Florida, they don't have any problems like that. In Kansas, in the two counties that were still, you know, said we're going to have open records, you know, even on January 1st of this year, you know, it's, you know, 35 years they defied the law. I talked to prosecutors in both counties, and they said they had never had any problems whatsoever.
And that is an important part of this new law, is that they can still petition to have things closed under special circumstances.
Exactly. And that's always been there. You know, that's always been there. That's in the law in all states, and that can happen. It shouldn't be done too much, but it can be done. There's also the law enforcement, the way it worked when I first got to Kansas, they would just throw the police reports out there on a table, and you'd come in the morning, they'd throw them out there about 7 a.m., and you just, you know, sift through them. And sometimes there would be items redacted, you know, like a rape victim's name, that kind of thing. But, you know, I think most media, in this area at least, respect the privacy of a rape victim, you know, and we don't publish their name. And in fact, I've seen situations where a rape victim was willing to have her name used, and the newspaper would consider, well, I don't know that we should do that, you know, maybe we shouldn't do that, you know, and even when we had permission.
Kansas City is on a state line, as everyone knows, but are there stories that have had components on either side of the state line that have been reported differently on one side of the state line than the other because of this
Certainly.
Law?
Yes. For example, you know, in Kansas City, as soon as there's a murder, for example, when there's a murder, within 24 hours, usually you have the probable cause affidavit, generally speaking, unless, you know, there's, you know, they're going to try to squash the information, but almost always. And so, you know, we just report out the story. There was a case, you know, as an example, there was a case in Overland Park last year, I think it was, where a woman had come from the East Coast to a convention here. She was murdered. When she didn't go back home, her mother called the Overland Park police. They started a search for this woman, never reported it to the public, found her body, didn't report the murder to the public. And then it was like a week later that they captured the suspect, and then they had a press conference and said, we've arrested this guy, you know, he murdered this woman. And that's just not, you know, when there's a search going on, maybe you need to be looking, you know, everybody ought to be on the alert for somebody. And when a body's found, you just tell the public we've had a murder, so people know. You know, it's just one of those things.
What was it like for you personally to see this open records policy signed into law in Kansas after so many years working toward just that?
It was fantastic. I mean, it changes the way it changes Kansas so much in the way that, you know, the media operates, because we can now get more details to the public. We can now have some oversight on cases. Do they have enough evidence to have arrested somebody? Do they have enough evidence to go into somebody's house and search it? That part is really fantastic. I mean, it's not over, though, and you've got to thank all the people that were involved, that have, the legislature and the hearts who, just they lobbied the legislature. I mean, and their story is just outrageous. You know, they lobbied them heavily and went to all the hearings and did what they had to do.
And what has the outcome been with the Hart story?
Well, their main goal was to get this law passed, and I think they want to see it go further. And then I think they have a lawsuit pending against the sheriff's department for going, for violation of constitutional rights.
Is anyone fighting the change in the law, or is there pretty broad consensus that this is a step forward? Any opponents?
No, not now. The prosecutors, I was told, were on board. Doug Anstadt with the Kansas Press Association said that the prosecutors, for the most part, were on board with this new law, and their intent was to get those records to people as soon as possible.
Well, so now that the Kansas records have opened up, what's your next big fight? Do you have another one in you that you can feel coming on?
I can feel one coming on, but I can't talk about it.
That's no fun for a talk show. Well, Central Standard is going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking with the directors of the new documentary, Citizen Coke. Is documentary filmmaking beholden to the same standards of objectivity that journalists seek to uphold? We'll find out. For now, it's time to say goodbye to Karen Dillon. Thanks so much, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I'm Gina Kaufman, Central Standard. We'll be right back.